every once in a while, a movie opens that reminds you of the great things of the past. A movie that is so bad that you want to go back and cleanse yourself by going to see when they did it better. Shall we name names?
The money.
But let's talk about great horror movies of the past and what made them so good.
If there's a screen, a movie, and a chance to talk, they're there. Cube Critics.
One thing about The Mummy, that, you know, it's not that bad of an idea for them to start this, what they're calling the dark universe, because they want to have their own endless parade of films like Marvel has successfully and DC has not as quite successfully. So The Mummy is this, one of the problems with it is that they're trying to mash in so many, the beginnings of so many other films into it, that it can't stand alone. So
yeah, and one, and there's, and you don't really care much about the characters because they're not that engaging in the first place. The only engaging character actually really is the mummy, and and she doesn't really get to do much other than kind of.
Yeah, I wanted to spend more time with her. I wanted to find. I just want to follow her around Egypt for a while.
Sit down, have a cup of tea. You know, talk about what it's like trying to take over the world. You know, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
In the early 30s, the original mummy, the mummy, got it. Right. This was Boris Karloff plays the mummy in this, and it was not that far. You know, the King Tutankhamun's tomb was found in the 20s, and there was an Egyptian craze, and that's why Universal decided they should do something about. Like, what can we do about?
And of course, there was also that rumor, though, the legend of a curse, because the people who actually went down into the tomb, bad things happened to them once they went home.
That's right. So they thought, how can we make a movie out of this? And it's just a great movie. It's simply well put together. So Boris Karloff plays an Imhotep who is awoken when tomb raiders come through. And then you fast forward 10 years later and he's playing and he's portraying himself as a modern-day Egyptian, quite wealthy. And then he goes on a quest. He sees a woman, and he thinks it's his lost love that he lost in ancient Egypt centuries ago. And he decides that he's going to kill the actual modern woman, and then she will be reincarnated as his great love. It is a wonderfully creepy film. It's a great plot. And Boris Karloff is fantastic in it as a bad guy in the lead, and you really do enjoy every single second that he's on film. And there are a couple close-ups of his face where you see the mummy-ish characteristics in this man, and you can't believe everyone around them can't figure out that he's a mummy.
So are there lots of bandages?
I mean, there are bandages in the beginning, but they're not.
That's better.
It's not a big bandage movie. So if you're thinking like a Scooby-Doo with a bandaged mummy kind of walking after, that's not what it is. Yeah. He's wearing a fez a lot of the time.
Okay, with much more dashing.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a great movie. The original Mummy, highly recommended.
I wanted to go back a little earlier in Boris Karloff's career.
Okay.
1931, when, of course, he was discovered, basically. Or, well, he'd been in a bunch of movies before, but he became a huge star with Frankenstein. And it's one of the great things about this film is you watch it and you see where so many, well, I suppose they've almost become cliches now, of modern cinema ran for the first time. I mean, this is just an extraordinary film that was put together kind of based on the Mary Shelley novel, which was then turned into a play, and so this is based on the play as much as anything else. But it also created its own things, including the look that Boris Karloff adopted.
Yeah,
they ended up actually copywriting the
big square head,
the square head and the bolts and everything, and the fact that he is. If you see a lot of pictures of him, he's green.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a black and white film, and they made him green because it showed up very differently on the black and white film. So, but then, you know, it has color pictures on it. Oh, yeah, well, that looks pretty good. So he became green. And what I think is interesting is that kind of one of the backstories is that apparently Universal was in real dire straits financially.
Well, it was probably a young company. I mean,
they were having a lot of trouble, and then they made Dracula with Bela Lugosi, and suddenly, they're making lots and lots of money, so they decided that they're going to start making lots of horror films. Mm-hmm. And one of the people that they actually looked at for doing the monster, Frankenstein's monster, was Bela Lugosi, who apparently was so disgusted with the way that he was going to have to look, he quit.
He only wanted to be a sexy vampire?
No, he said, "I did not come from Hungary, where I was a big star, to pose as a scarecrow," which was, it turned out, was a big, big mistake.
Yeah.
And apparently Boris Karloff, who was English, you know, he was English.
I didn't know that.
He was English. This was a stage name that he adopted when he was in Canada.
Really?
Yeah. And he's Henry, I think his first name was. And he was walking across the set one day in at Universal and thinking he was looking pretty dapper. He had a nice new suit on. And this guy comes on and said, "Hey, would you like to audition to be the monster?" But it turned out that it was a very, 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 very good thing. There is an iconic scene in it where, I don't think this is a spoiler, but where he has an interaction.
I don't think you should worry about giving away the plot to Frankenstein. Carry on.
But he meets a little girl who is the first person who actually doesn't run from him. And they start picking flowers and taking the petals and throwing them into the water. Is very, very sweet. And then they finish the petals. There's nothing else to do. So he throws her into the water. And this became this huge controversial scene.
Really?
Because the question was, do you show this happening to this little girl? So a lot of the early versions, they don't have him picking her up. They just have her suddenly disappearing.
Yeah.
But it was later added back in. But it's just interesting.
Her to suddenly disappear is even more terrifying, I feel like, than you seeing that, because then you imagine so many more horrible things.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty horrible, too.
So it's pretty horrible.
All right, so Frankenstein. But
anyway, so that, James Whale
directed
that, 1931. And I have another one from 1931. Should I do that now, or do you want to do your next?
You do that now, and then I'll wrap it up.
Okay. Just as this was all coming together in America, over in Germany, there was a guy called Fritz Lang who was making another amazing movie called M, which is one of the, even now, it raises the hairs on the back of my neck to think about this movie. This was the film that launched Peter Lorre's career. It's in German, and he stars as this horrible serial killing pedophile.
Yeah, he's just the worst,
just
of all
horrible.
Time. Yeah,
but this was Lang's first sound movie, and he came up with the idea of the leitmotif, using a tune, which is going to occur again and again in the story, and it is him whistling in the Hall of the Mountain King. And it's a very dark film because obviously it's black and white, and Fritz Lang really played with this. And the thing that I actually remember most of all from seeing this the first time is the smoking, because everybody is smoking and huge cigars or pipes. I think there's even a guy who is smoking a cigar in a pipe. I mean, so everything is smoky and whatever, and it brings forward the sense of corruption in the city, where eventually the criminals decide that they are going to do something about the serial killer. It's not, though, because they actually really have so much of a problem with him. It's just it's interfering with their business, because the police are always looking for the bad guy. It is dark. It is sinister. It is just so wonderful. And then, of course, there is the matter of the M itself, which I won't, let's not spoil that. It's so simple and so wonderful. Great film.
It's a great movie. I had a poster, well, not original, but a reproduction advertising M in my house for many, many years because I love that film so much.
Like having Peter Lorre just sneering down at you.
And once we had kids, we took it down because I didn't want them asking, what is that about anyway? and having to explain it to them too young. But the other thing to think about when you're watching something from 1931, 32 is how young filmmaking was.
Yes.
And so there are things that they do with
and particularly
deep
how young
focus or how they tell a story with what they show and what they don't show that no one had ever done before. And the thing about horror movies is that so much of it is what you see and what you don't see. And so when you're watching it, think about that. Think about how Fritz Lang helped invent film language because it was still being, I mean, there are people that are still recreating and coming up with new ideas, but he came up with vocabulary that we've been using ever since that you still see.
And particularly at that time, movies were being reinvented by sound, by this brand new medium, sound in a movie.
All right, so I want to flash forward 50 years to 1981 because the movie that I kept thinking about during The Mummy, which is, you know, they're trying to get an action picture but and a horror movie and also have it be comedic and they don't get it right. And in 1981, John Landis wrote and directed a film that got horror and comedy in a great mix, and that's American Werewolf in London, which starred Griffin Dunne and David Naughton, who at the time, David Naughton was best known for I'm a Pepper, You're a Pepper. He's a guy who was like dancing around in the
talking about peppers.
And he also had a disco hit because he had starred in a sitcom that was an imitation of Saturday Night Live. I think it was called Making It or something like that. Anyway, so David Naughton was going to be a future superstar. He obviously never became a superstar, but Griffin Dunne still around. He's in one of the Amazon features. I Love Dick. He stars in that TV show, so he's still around. So they play buddies who are on a camping trip, and they run into some werewolf problems, and one of them becomes a werewolf, and then it's about trying to save their lives and can they release the curse and can they save their friend. And David Naughton and Griffin Dunne have so much fun, and the special effects at that point were incredible. Rick Baker did the special effects. He's such a genius. And 1981 was some kind of a weird werewolf year. There's also Wolven and then The Howling, which is pretty good.
There was one of these films which had this incredible transformation scene of a hand.
Yeah, that one, that is The Howling.
That's
The Howling. But American Werewolf in London has incredible transformation scenes too. And he was, I guess he was only a consultant with The Howling, but he did the actual effects on American Werewolf in London. I think he won an Oscar for them. If not, he won an Oscar at some point. Incredible special effects that to this day hold up. So it is so much fun, and they get the mix of horror and comedy in the right ways where it really is truly scary and sincerely, truly funny. John Landis did a great job.
Yeah. We should, I know this isn't part of the list, but it just came out. We should mention Get Out just came out on.
Oh, disc, it's true.
Which, if you haven't seen it, that is someone, that is Jordan Peele's direction. He plays with the memes of horror movies and makes a point, which is just extraordinary.
Yeah, it is. He manages to be funny, scary, and make a social point. There is no social point to an American Werewolf in London. There is no greater social message. It just is what it is, and it's fun.
Good.